Hello there, I'm Miranda Gretton, and this is Take a Moment with NCHC, the show where we talk to you and your colleagues about experiences that affect you. Listen on your drive between patients or in your downtime, whenever you get the chance to take a moment.
I'm Jacqueline Roper, I'm an occupational therapist at Wyndham Health Centre in the Supported Care Service.
And I'm Suzanne Schutt, I'm an FCP and I work within the Musculoskeletal Physiotherapy Service.
So let's start with you, Suzanne. What was your introduction to the perimenopause?
I am not at an age of perimenopause. However, my interest started in it, mainly from working within primary care, to be honest. And also from, I suppose, experiences in my own family with grandparents, my parents. I was always sort of quite curious, I think, about it. And I find in primary care in particular, I was getting a lot of patients coming through, sort of women that are around perimenopausal age. They've had every single test under the sun, and they still can't understand their symptoms. And they're like, you know, what is it? And I think that's where I thought, actually, maybe there's something that I need to learn a bit more here. And actually, from speaking to the team, I'm going to be doing some training within the team about peri and post-menopause, sort of more in the workplace and with patients, because I think there's a lot that's not understood about it. But also there's a lot of patients that I think we could manage a lot better if we knew more about it and what to expect. And I've even had conversations with staff members on our team. There's a lot of confusion as to what is it. But yeah, so my experience has predominantly been really through work, to be honest, and also trying to, I suppose, educate our team better so that we can help patients better and more effectively and manage them better. But also, you know, work colleagues chatting about it amongst us women, because I think it doesn't really get talked about. People talk about sweats, and that's really, I found, all they really talk about. But there's so much more to it that actually we should just be talking about and, yeah, looking at ways we can support each other better with it, really.
It's important to know that perimenopause is the transition period before you reach the menopause, and it can last for 4 years or 8 years or even longer. And it's not classed as actual menopause until you've not had a menstrual period for 12 months. So as soon as you've had that year of no periods, then you're in the menopause. But prior to that, any symptoms that you feel that are menopause type symptoms are actually perimenopause.
The other thing that I found really interesting is that perimenopause can start from the age of 35. That's quite, you know, and I thought, gosh, I'm 32. I wouldn't even be thinking in 3 years. It's only since I started researching into that, actually, it can start young. And there's obviously lots of other reasons. If, you know, any sort of surgery or anything like that, if women have to have early hysterectomies, those sorts of things are really important that we have to consider. So it can happen a lot younger. But I don't think we think about it when we're in our 30s, to be honest.
It's important that we don't just sort of associate it with age, that we look at the symptoms almost in isolation and think about it like that. So Jacqueline, what was your experience?
So I'm 50 now, and probably about a couple of years ago, I started to get some symptoms. And for me, it was more around sort of stress. I'm not good at listening to podcasts, but I think I actually did listen to one. And a lady was talking about these kind of stress related symptoms and anxiety. And I thought, perhaps I have a bit of low level of that sometimes, but I just really noticed quite a difference. And then I was talking to somebody a bit more about it, and they said, you know, you can actually get a blood test from your doctor to find out whether you are in perimenopause. And I thought, well, that's interesting, I'll have a look, because I also noticed some changes in my cycle a bit as well. And I did have a blood test, and interestingly, the doctor said, you're not in perimenopause. And another friend said, well, actually, it's very hard from a blood test to distinguish that. So it is a bit kind of like hearsay, what people tell you, and you can get into comparison about it. And then I had some symptoms where, when I had my fullest day of my period, I was getting really upset stomach, like I'd eaten something that didn't agree with me. And so I was talking to the doctor about that then as well. And, well, they suggested some like IBS medication to take. And then I went and had a session with a lady who specializes in kind of female issues. And it was the same person who does these podcasts. And what she said to me, she really explained to me very clearly how the changes in the hormones and why these things happen. And I sort of had a bit of a wowie moment. I'm not going mad. My body's not doing weird things. It is just part of this change as I'm getting older, if you like. And she explained to me that the drop in progesterone can actually have an effect on your bowel. Suzanne's nodding there. Don't know if you've heard of that. But then it's interesting because then I was at work one day and I kind of felt to kind of explain a bit why I'd had these episodes of illness. And another lady said that she'd had some similar symptoms and someone else's mum had, and they hadn't associated, well, one had associated that with her mum, but the other lady just thought, you know, that she maybe had some irritable bowel, but coincidentally it's around that time. So I'm quite glad I sort of talked about it out loud in the office, really, and I think that's sometimes the only way to learn from each other.
Yeah. So how old were you? Was this recent? Because you say you're 50 now. Was this in recent?
Yeah, it's in the last couple of years. Yeah, it was in the last couple of years. And I think what all I noticed was that, say, if work was a bit more stressful, which it, you know, can happen at certain times, that that impact of other things going on in my life, increasing my stress, was impacting on that too. So whereas perhaps normally I might think, oh yeah, it was a tough day today, the ramifications of what might be, you know, a really full-on hard day at work, as it were, and don't get me wrong, I really enjoy my job, but my body just doesn't quite cope with it as well, you know, with that sort of anxiety side of things and that stress building up. So it's just been about kind of learning how to manage that, really, because I guess it's easy to take remedies or whatever to try and sort of numb those feelings, but if there's a way that I can perhaps change the way that I'm living that will chill my body out a bit more. So that's sort of what I've been looking at, really. How can I work on my relaxation and my downtime and exercise that kind of get that balance in my body that keeps it well and healthy? Because walking massively, you know, has a massive impact on me sleeping better and feeling brighter in myself. So it's a sort of collaboration of things, really.
And prior to all of this, did you have any idea about the kind of impact of hormones on your body? You know, because I'm 39 and I feel every month there's something, and I'm not perimenopausal, but I don't believe, but hormones around my periods are really bad, you know, and ovulation as well, halfway through the month, that really hits me sometimes. So it's only now, though, at 39, that I'm giving it any time, that I'm really thinking about it and doing research on it and understanding my own body, like you say, and what helps and what doesn't help and the stressful times and sort of pinpointing that. And so did you know your body that well beforehand, or has this really been the start of it for you?
I'd probably like to say I thought I did, or I looked after it quite well, but I didn't. I've learned a lot more about how a woman's body works that I really think we should be taught in school. I was quite horrified that I didn't know certain things. Yeah, I know my anatomy and what have you, but I just couldn't quite believe it, really. I didn't know, and I have much greater awareness of my cycle, much more so, like ovulation, I might have some mild cramps. My period, I've never really sort of massively suffered with pain when I have my period. There is some, and maybe, you know, I have to just move a bit more slowly or just be a bit more gentle with myself. I can't go at the speed I might like to when I move around. Perhaps my cycle is longer, so it might have been, say, 25, 28 days, and it might be 33. 36 is the max, I think. So it's just interesting to kind of observe those changes and what's going on, but not think it's the end of the world either, that when I do get to menopause, I'm just on a journey and this is where I'm at. I haven't really experienced hot flushes. My mum said that she had her menopause when she was 48, and I wasn't living near her at that time, but she did say she had a lot of hot flushes. And I know that is a big impact for women. So I'm kind of like, is that going to happen? And we'll see. So yeah, it's just not feeling down about it. It's something to kind of embrace rather than see that as a negative thing in my life.
But that's such a good attitude to have, because I think if you hadn't had done this research and had these conversations and listened to the podcasts and, you know, really immersed yourself in the idea of it, you wouldn't feel so open to it happening to you. It would be more of a shock, and so then, you know, once it's already happening and then you've got to do the research, you're already feeling the symptoms, you're already feeling the stress, there's a lot more pressure. Suzanne, from your perspective in terms of doing your research, have you kind of learned anything that shocked you?
Oh, I've honestly learned so much. I mean, I've had a little boy, but or even the hormones afterwards, how your hormones are affected. I sort of think you get a lot of support when you're pregnant and the post-pregnant, you know, you, with work and all the things that you talk about, and they make sure that, you know, you can manage everything. But menopause, I think, gosh, when I was looking at all the effects onto the body, I knew, like you said, Jackie, about the most common ones, like the sweats and people say like brain fog, that sort of thing. But I mean, estrogen, your hormones affect every single part of your body pretty much. And I think educating women, particularly in primary care, I know from just chatting to some of the doctors, I mean, the awareness isn't, you know, it isn't there. It needs to be there, really, because when, like yourself, you go to the doctor, Jackie, it's nice to be asked perhaps a little bit more into it, because blood tests, like you say, they're not always that reliable. We can't rely on them solely. We have to, and every woman is just so different. And then I think it is just, I find now managing my patients when I see them in clinic, I literally, if they're around peri postmenopausal age, I always ask them about, are you menopausal? Have you had any symptoms? And I always have a chat with them about it. And sometimes even then it helps to manage their, you know, their expectations better. Particularly with physio, we get a lot of women with joint pains, muscle pains. That's a big part of menopause as well. And if there's no real pattern to it and we can't pin it to anything and they've had investigations and nothing's, you know, coming back from it, I do sort of have that conversation with women now and say, well, actually, you know, that menopause will have a part to play on your body. And I think just having that awareness of your body and knowing how to manage it, like you say, like with, if you like walking, or if you find that actually your sleep is more effective, it's looking at ways you can manage that better. I don't know if you've seen the statistics about women with work as well within the workplace and menopause symptoms. They're quite shocking. And I think it's just because we don't really talk about it, do we?
You're right. It's terrifying, actually, that some women just feel they cannot carry on working. People leave work because they just don't feel supported, or they just don't feel comfortable. I think it's a really good tip that both of you are saying, that you should go away and really understand a woman's body. You know, think about it. It doesn't matter what age you are. You could be in your 20s, but go away and think about what a woman's body actually is made up of, comprised of, and how it works and what happens to it.
From learning into it now, and actually how I manage patients now, from talking about it to them, I find it so much easier just from having those conversations and having the understanding and actually saying to them, well, look, this is normal, this is what to expect. And like you say then, Jackie, over time you sort of learn your body better. But I, as soon as I said about it, the amount of the females on our team that said, oh, well, I think that'll be very interesting, not just for, you know, for all the staff training, but for their own experiences as well. So I know that generally things like that are really well received, aren't they?
Interestingly, if you just Google menopause and bone health, it does tell you that menopause significantly speeds bone loss and increases the risk, yeah, of osteoporosis. So yeah, it is absolutely linked to, you know, to what you do on a daily basis. And it, you know, there are recommendations to do kind of weight bearing exercises like walking, jogging, playing tennis, dancing, you know, and strength and balance exercises and things like that, and eating foods that are high in calcium to try and keep your bones strong. But I guess, Suzanne, that you should be doing that way prior to any idea of menopause. Yeah. If we're keeping our bones healthy, that will help going into it, will it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of research. I think a lot of people worry with something like osteoporosis or osteopenia, which is the pre-version of osteoporosis, like the earlier stage of it. A lot of people worry that if they're told that and their bone density is less, things like weight training is actually one of the biggest things to support osteoporosis, is to get women weight training. And I think it's that balance of because your body, you do have to slow down a bit. In clinic, we see the very extremes. We see people that don't do any exercise and some people that do loads of exercise. We don't very often get the middle ground, but I think it's finding exercises that, you know, like you say, that you can, I suppose, adapt them slightly. So I would say some weight training is good, because that will help with osteoporosis, reducing that risk of developing it. Also things like, you know, mobility, like Pilates. I'm a big fan of Pilates, because, you know, you can use weights within Pilates. It's all about sort of body movement, and also it helps you gain that awareness of your body. You can incorporate pelvic floor exercises into it, which again is a big part with menopause and UTIs and prolapse continence, those sorts of things. So Yeah, I think it's quite nice to tailor a bit of a program. I now try to sort of talk through with women what their week looks like, typically with exercise. And then I would say, okay, well, look, how can we, what should we adapt? What can we adapt? And maybe we need to bring in a little bit more of, for example, something like weight training, because I don't find many women do much weight training. And if they're told that they've got a thinning of the bones, or, you know, I suppose their bone density is less, however it's described to them when they're diagnosed with it, they might worry a little bit about, oh, well, I don't think I should do that because I don't want to cause more problems. But actually, that helps with bone generation, you know, regeneration, and it's good. It's good for bones.
And there are a lot of other things you can do that are non-medical. But Jacqueline, would you ever consider anything medical for your, if you, when you are going to go through the menopause, would you consider something like HRT, do you think? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think I wouldn't want to if I didn't have to, but I, if symptoms got as such that I needed to, then I'd do whatever I needed to keep me functioning, keep me well, really. Yeah, I don't really sort of want to take tablets if I can avoid it. So I'd probably look to see if there were some alternatives. I don't know anybody myself who takes it at the moment.
What more do you think the trust could be doing to support women who are experiencing perimenopause specifically? So not the menopause, because we talk about that, we do, and we have our resources. But do you think there's anything that the trust could be doing to support women who are experiencing perimenopause?
I mean, this is a good start, isn't it? And the fact that the trust is talking about menopause and women within the trust, and we've got these like champion ladies, not that we need a perimenopausal champions as well, but I think just to keep that, like, you know, that constant flow of information coming through, and like sharing different websites, just keeping that top up of information, because there'll always be new women, if you like, coming up to that point, who may, or people who didn't work in the trust from one month to the next, they're like, oh, I've not heard of this before. And just, yeah, just keeping those conversations going. And maybe because I'm a mental health first aider as well, and we had some supervision not that long back, and that was sort of suggested that, you know, it's kind of like a community that grows of mental health first aiders, but also that we're all responsible for that, whoever we are anyway, whether you've done the training or not. So maybe we just need to like look out for each other.
Yeah. I think the idea of like menopause cafes, I think giving women the option, some people might want it, some people might not. And I know, you know, I know just from when I was pregnant, but I had a lot of assessments or chat, you know, meetings with my line manager. It sounds really formal with an assessment, but just having the conversations through with her and just saying, you know, is there anything I can do to help? If there's anything that changes, come speak to me, and feel like you can have those conversations with your managers or with your team. And I think maybe having a bit more support for women that are around menopause would be quite good to actually, because when you actually learn how much it can affect the body, you think actually there is a reason why, like you say, the brain fog, or you're getting all these joint pains, or why you might be getting ongoing back pains, you know, things aren't getting better. And I suppose coming up with like a bit of a plan together, I think can be helpful, and given just the women the choice of it, isn't it? It's not everyone might want to do it, but the ones that do would probably really find that useful.
Is there anything else that you would say to somebody who might be thinking, oh, that sounds like me, I think I might be going through that? Is there any other advice you could give anybody?
My feeling is just kind of like, listen to what your body's telling you. It might be that, you know, you're not imagining things. There is some changes going on, and maybe talk to your doctor about it, or talk to another woman or somebody who you think might have some knowledge. Maybe over, if you get to sit together with people at lunch at work or whoever, or in the office seems a great place for people to talk about all sorts. So just raise a question, and then you're a good way to hear what's going on for other people, isn't it? But I think we have to trust our bodies, and yeah, just I think preparation is key. It's rather like you go into perimenopause and menopause being knowledgeable, and not it kind of being done to you, if that makes sense. That you know, you just generally look after yourself, the way you eat, sleep, move, everything, what you drink. We can't treat our bodies in a way that's not respectful and not expect some consequences from that either. So it's just being a bit more nurturing at that time, isn't it?
thank you for listening to Take a Moment with NCHC. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please visit the podcast intranet page to leave a comment and for details of our other episodes. You can also follow NCHC on all social media channels.